It's 6 o'clock, February 2nd. I am opening, calling to order the Planning Commission meeting for the City of Arroyo Grande, February 2nd, 2021. Can we have a roll call, please?
Chair Martin?
Here.
Vice Chair Shiro?
Here.
Commissioner Guthrie?
Here.
Commissioner Maravilla?
Here.
And do we have Commissioner Sage with us?
At this point, apparently he's absent. Is this a slot for him and he's just not online yet? It's just...
He was on earlier, by the way. When I first got on, he was on, but I couldn't hear him. And at one point it said he was talking, but I couldn't hear him. But I wasn't a panelist.
Well, at this point, I see four commissioners that are here and available. Mr. Sage, if you are available, you might try to get out and reinsert, reattach, reconnect, whatever the appropriate computer term is in order to try to pull that off. In the meantime, may we stand for the salute to the flag. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you, everyone. Next item on the agenda is the agenda review, but before I do that, what I'd like to do is give a shout-out and a welcome to Mr. Jim Guthrie, who is the newest member to the Planning Commission. He's recently reappointed to the commission, a former city council person. Looking forward to you, Jim. Welcome aboard. We're off and running.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
We don't have a long agenda here tonight. Is there any comments or changes or alterations that anybody from the commission would like to make to the agenda as it stands? Seeing none, I will move on. Beginning of every Planning Commission meeting, we offer a public comment period, which is an invitation to members of the community to present issues, thoughts, or suggestions on matters not scheduled on this agenda. Comments should be limited to those matters that are within the jurisdiction of the Planning Commission, and members of the public may provide public comment remotely by joining the Zoom meeting, which is listed on the agenda, or utilizing one of the phone numbers that's listed below or is also listed on the agenda. Once you phone in and you are connected, if you would like to speak at this point or at some other point when it's appropriate for public input, you're going to need to hit *9 on your phone in order to get the attention of the staff here that is managing our Zoom meeting. Staff, is there anyone that is online at this point that wishes to address the commission, excuse me, on an item that is not on our agenda tonight?
For anyone that would like to speak, please use the raise hand button at the bottom of your screen. I'm not seeing any hands, Mr. Martin.
Very good. Very good. We'll continue on. The written communications, I know for Item 8A, the conditional use permit, there is one comment that was in the original package, three additional comments that were forwarded to us as commissioners. But is there any additional or late written communications that we need to add in at this time?
Chair Martin, there was a raised hand.
Okay.
Would you like to take the comment?
I'm happy to take that comment. We really haven't proceeded anywhere on it. As awkward as this whole process is, whatever we can do to facilitate the public participating community, I'm happy to do that.
James, you're allowed to speak.
Chair Martin, members of the commission, my name is James Lundy. First of all, I'd like to just check, make sure you can hear me.
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Perfect, thank you. I represent ownership of 1170 Grand Avenue.
Okay, Mr. Lundy, I'm going to interrupt you at this time, and it's not because I'm not interested and more than happy to allow you to speak. This initial community comment period is designated for people from the community who want to address the commission for items that are not on the agenda.
Okay.
The item that you're speaking on, I believe, is will be here shortly on the agenda.
And perfect.
At the appropriate time, you will be invited to participate again and welcome to raise your hand and participate at that time. Is that okay? Is that clear?
Yes. Yes, thank you.
So I'm going to pass on you at this point, and please don't feel any kind of insult or anything. I just want to make sure the process gets done cleanly.
We do have another raised hand, Jolene Rhodes.
Okay. Ms. Rhodes? Ms. Rhodes, I see that you're muted if you're participating on the Zoom meeting. You're going to need to unmute.
It was a mistake.
That's fine. Would you like to speak or not? You're not interested in speaking at this time?
Correct.
Okay. Very good. I'm going to pull this back. Was there one more written communication? Patrick, did I hear that? Or Andrew, was there another communication that we don't have in our packet that was submitted?
I believe that there were a total of 3 supplemental memos that were sent out, but
very good.
That would be great.
We have received all 3 and hopefully have been able to review all 3 of those comments. Okay, let's move on. I've got a single item on the consent agenda. The consent agenda, the single item is the minutes for approval from our meeting of January 5th. Entertain a motion to approve.
I'll move to approve the minutes of the January 5th meeting.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second, and we have a roll call vote on the consent agenda, please.
Commissioner Maravilla?
Yes.
Commissioner Shiro?
Yes.
Commissioner Guthrie?
I will abstain on this. I wasn't there, and I also was unable to review it.
And Chair Martin?
Yes. Very good. So that passes. Next item is item 8, public hearing. We have a single item. This is a consideration of a conditional use permit 20-003, the establishment of a new conference facility and commercial offices in an existing structure. The location is 1164 East Grand Avenue. The applicant is Joel Riley, and he is represented by Bryce Engstrom. We have a staff report on this. Mr. Perez, I'm guessing that you're up at this point.
Yes, thank you, Chair Martin. Good evening, Planning Commission and members of the public. My name is Andrew Perez, Associate Planner. I'll be making a brief presentation to you all about the project proposed at 1164 East Grand Avenue. So the subject property is located in the Fair Oaks mixed-use zoning district. It is surrounded by commercial land uses, more specifically commercial condos immediately to the west, a storage facility to the north, and a drive-through retail located just to the west. The nearest residential use to the subject property is about 100 feet to the north on Briscoe Road. The Fair Oaks mixed-use zoning district, its primary purpose is to provide for a combination of retail and service uses. The commercial uses proposed are allowed with a mine use permit. However, the conference facility use is allowed with a conditional use permit, which is why we are here this evening. And just a reminder to commission and public listening that the conditional use permit review process allows for the review of a proposed use, the configuration of improvements that are proposed, as well as potential impacts on surrounding areas from the use, and is an opportunity for the commission and staff to place conditions to mitigate those potential impacts. Moving on, the land use designation, or general plan land use designation for this property is mixed use. The proposed use is supported by policies in both the land use element and the economic development element. The land use element policies generally emphasize a diverse mixture of uses in our mixed use corridors, East Grand Avenue being one of those. And the economic development policies encourage both the repurposing of existing buildings to new uses, and also promotes hospitality-related uses, which is what we have before us this evening. So the applicant is proposing to establish commercial offices in an event facility within an existing commercial building. The building is 2,146 square feet, and within that, they propose to dedicate 736 square feet for commercial offices, 880 square feet for an indoor assembly area, 211 square feet for a small catering kitchen. They also have some area for restrooms and storage areas, and there is a 670 square foot covered patio at the rear of the building. And just wanted to note that no expansion of the building is proposed as part of this project. So for the applicant, the facility would be, the event facility would host small events such as birthday parties, provide meeting room space for local organizations and other similar type gatherings. Plans do include a catering kitchen. There are no cooking appliances in that kitchen. It'll mainly be used for preparation, distribution, and cleanup of meals that are brought from off-site. And as I previously mentioned, there is an existing outdoor area that will be available for guests of the events. So here's a look at the proposed floor plan. It's kind of small and hard to see, but towards the top of this image, which is the western side of the building, is the area dedicated to the offices and the restrooms. To the bottom of the image and the eastern portion of the building is the event center with the catering kitchen, and then a hallway kind of dividing those two uses. So with regards to access and parking, the property is accessed from a driveway off of East Grand Avenue. This driveway is also used by the commercial condo complex to the west and the storage facility, as there is to the access easement, or an easement for both access and drainage recorded on the property that benefits both of those properties. So with regards to parking, each of the two uses, the offices and the assembly areas, are parked at different rates. The offices are parked at one space for every 250 square feet of floor area. So with the proposed 736 square feet, results in parking requirement of three spaces. The assembly area is parked at one space for every 50 square feet of assembly area that's proposed. And so this includes both the indoor assembly room and that 670 square foot patio at the rear. So for a total of 1,550 square feet, which results in a parking requirement of 31 spaces, bringing the total requirement up to 34 parking spaces. So the existing site has only 14 parking spaces available. So, you know, it's deficient 20 parking spaces. And to make up for this, the applicant has come to a tentative agreement with the owner of the property at 1126 East Grand Avenue to utilize 37 parking spaces at that property as an off-site parking lot that can be used for events. The Arroyo Grande Municipal Code allows shared parking facilities when the off-site parking is located within 500 feet of the associated use. So when you consider the on-site and off-site parking, the project has a surplus of 17 parking spaces. So the agreement that's been reached tentatively with that owner at 1126 allows the applicant to utilize their parking spaces from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m., Monday through Friday, and all day on the weekends. So a condition of approval has been included in the draft resolution that will restrict events to being held in which the hours of the off-site parking is available to guests, so we don't have conflicts between the two users. And it should be noted that any future changes to the assembly space will require amendments to the parking agreement, and that's also been included as a condition of approval in the draft resolution. There was some concern raised by staff during the review process that noise could be an issue during these events. Just wanted to point out that the municipal code establishes noise limits for activities near noise-sensitive uses. noise-sensitive uses can include residential homes, churches, hospitals, and schools, among others. So the code prohibits the creation of noise that is measured at greater than 70 decibels during the daytime hours, which are between 7 a.m. and 10 p.m., and then drops down to 65 decibels overnight. So as I mentioned previously, the nearest sensitive uses are residences located on Briscoe Road, about 100 feet from the subject property. So in order to mitigate these potential concerns, staff has also included a condition that requires the applicant to monitor noise and demonstrate that they are in compliance with the ordinance. This project did go before the staff advisory committee back in November. That's where those noise concerns were raised, and the conditions of approval were drafted. Overall, the committee expressed support for the project, and we are tonight. So going on to the environmental review, this project is subject to review in accordance with the California Environmental Quality Act. It was determined that the project is categorically exempt per section 15301A of the guidelines regarding existing facilities. This exemption applies to projects that consist minor or minor alterations to facilities that don't include an expansion of the use, which is what we have this project. So the municipal code requires that the public is notified of conditional use permit hearings. So all property owners within 300 feet of the project site were notified with a mail notice. A ad was published in the Tribune, and the agenda was published at City Hall and on the city's website. Tonight's agenda and city staff report were both posted at City Hall and on the website, as I mentioned, in accordance with Government Code Section. And as we talked about, maybe we got started this evening, there were four emails of public comment that were received. One was included in the staff report as an attachment, and then three additional supplemental memos were sent out this afternoon with the other public comment. So in conclusion, staff recommends that the Planning Commission adopt the prepared resolution approving conditional use permit 20-003. And that concludes my presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions should the committee or commission have any. Thank you.
At this point, does any of the commissioners have questions for staff? Yeah, Mr. Guthrie?
Just one in a separate email. I got a off-site parking agreement from Ruffoni's as well. Is that part of this consideration, or was that?
Oh, Commissioner Guthrie, that was sent as an example.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, just the form that we use. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. I see Ken Sage is talking, but we can't hear.
Mr. Sage, do you have a question for staff at this point? You're on mute. You need to unmute your... Yeah, even unmuted, we're not able to hear you, Mr. Sage. I'm not sure what the issue is. You might try to just vacate and then reconnect. I'm not sure what happened because we... You're not hearable at this point.
Mr. Sage, you could also call in if need be and do it via telephone.
Okay. There's an alternative there for you. Does the applicant or the applicant's representative here and wish to make any kind of presentation?
Yes, I believe they're online.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Mr. Engstrom, yes, this is a... Chair Martin, you are on.
Thank you. I'm Bryce Engstrom. I'm the project architect. I didn't have anything to add. I think the staff report was plenty comprehensive. I just thought I'd let you know I'm here to answer any questions.
Very good. Are there questions to the applicant from any of the members of the commission? Yes. Commissioner Maravilla?
I think this would be for the applicant. It might be for staff too. But is there an intended capacity for the events at the facility?
Yes, there are capacity limits stated in the occupancy numbers on the plans.
Can you name them?
I can't name them offhand, no.
Okay. Patrick, do you have any idea what the intended occupancy, like how big are these events are that we're talking about right now?
The plans indicate, I think, 5 staff and 52 guests or participants.
Total.
57 okay. Total.
That's correct.
Thank you.
I had a question.
Yes, Mr. Shira, please. Your turn.
Just regarding, is there a 10 o'clock close limit on meetings for this property, 10 p.m.? Is that the end of business day?
That's what the staff report says, I believe.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, Mr. Guthrie, you have a question or two?
But then that does probably end up maybe staff as well. The way I read that is that those hours were tied to the use of the parking lot, were restricted to the use of the parking lot. Is the parking lot restricted to 10 o'clock?
The 10 o'clock hour was generated based on the tentative parking agreement that the applicant came to with the owner of 1126 East Grand. So if they're able to grant permission to go later than 10 p.m., then there's no city ordinance that would prevent them from going later.
Okay, I wanted to clarify that. And I had a question then for the applicant. So there's office uses as well. Is there a direct connection between the office tenancy plan and the conference room? It seems like there should be because they're using the bathrooms, but I did want to check on that.
If you look at the plans, the access to the bathrooms is actually from the outside in the rear yard. So that kind of hope that clarifies that question.
Thank you.
Ken Sage, it looks like you're connected now. You may have to dial *6 to unmute your phone.
Continue to work on those technical difficulties. I do want to piggyback on that question about the restrooms. Access from the outside. So if I'm working in the office and it's raining and I need to use the restroom, I have to go outside the building in order to access that restroom?
Yes, that's true. But there's a very large overhang around the entire perimeter of the building, so you're pretty well sheltered from the rain. And this is something that the owner of the building using the offices for their own insurance business. So this is what they prefer.
Okay. So to kind of piggyback again on Mr. Guthrie's question, this is going to become an active insurance office with a adjoining conference room or facility to allow for meetings with up to 50 participants.
Yes.
Okay. The other question I have is it looks like there are these two existing parking spaces that are going to be added with the removal of the trash enclosure?
Yes.
And how is trash going to be handled?
By wheel-away bins that are stored in the rear yard. There's already an access gate through the fence on the right side of the entry.
Okay. And I guess this piggybacks back to staff. Has the trash collection company reviewed this plan? And is curbside pickup on Grand Avenue a fairly typical method for trash collection?
No, it's not. We have not gotten confirmation from the sanitation services, but we will ask for that prior to the building permit issuance for the minor tenant improvements that are proposed.
Yeah, that's going to end up being, depending on how the whole thing unfolds here tonight, that's going to be one of my conditions. I'm not excited about the trash company stopping along Grand Avenue and picking up trash in that fashion. I think typically in that commercial corridor, they're going off the street and onto the property and into dumpsters in order to pick that trash up. Granted, if there aren't activities going on, the volume of trash is probably going to be very, very modest coming out of this building. But given the commercial zoning, the commercial nature, I'm not very supportive of removing a trash enclosure and transitioning back to, you know, curbside pickup at this location. But that's just one of the items I think we're going to have to look at as we continue to go on. And the other, I guess the question came to me at the very end here that's probably more staff-related than applicant-related. The CEQA says expansion of use. To me, going from a building use where there's about 1,500 square feet, where it requires 6 parking spaces as an office commercial, to one where we're going to open up to the public where there are going to be 50 guests, I'm curious to know why that was not defined as an expansion of use.
I think, you know, Mr. Martin, on the surface, it appears to be, but given the nature of the facility and that we won't have events there on a regular basis, you know, be limited to those night and weekend hours, I think we can make the stance that's not an intensification of the retail use that was open 7 days a week during business hours.
Okay. Thank you for that. I guess at this point I don't have other questions for staff or the applicant. I'm happy to open it up for the public. I know there's at least one person that is sitting there. There we go. Mr. Sage. Yes.
Mayor, can you hear me?
I can hear you now, Mr. Sage.
Okay, very good.
If you have questions for staff or for the applicant, both are at your disposal here.
Actually, I do have, I believe. In looking at the layout, there appears to be a fence at the back end of the property. And the question I have is there access through that fence so that in the case of emergency, people can, you know, evacuate the property at the rear?
I will defer answering this question to the applicant. So if Bryce or Joel would like to hop in there.
I don't believe there's any gate back there. I don't know that there's any public access other than an adjacent property there, too. So I'm not sure the viability of that as an exit point.
That's the, in walking the property, the one thing I did notice is that it would appear that attendees would be sort of funneled towards the back of the property, and it seemed to be a little concerning that in case of emergency, they would not be able to return to the entrance and would have to get out some other way, and everything else seems to be surrounded with fencing in that area, so I certainly recommend that we take a look at providing some exit capability through that rear end of the property. I think the other questions or issues I have, I had one other, and that is during events that would occur there, will alcohol be served?
I would defer to my client on that if Joel's there. I don't think we've talked about that particular issue. I kind of have to assume there would be, but I'm not positive.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
There would be a possibility of if it were brought
Ms.
on.
Ms. Robbie, I'm sorry. Yeah. Do you mind introducing yourself? Just
yeah, I'm Joel Bryant.
Part of the protocol.
Yeah, and the applicant. There's two things I want to address. One, as far as you're concerned about the trash, currently the trash truck pulls all the way up into our parking lot in order to where there was a dumpster before. And so we currently use trash cans in order to get rid of green waste and waste, and they currently pull up into the parking lot in order to get rid of the trash. So that would not be, they're not stopping on Grand Avenue.
Okay.
And that they're the same, and it's the same trash that also dumps Coffee Express. And so it's the exact, they use ours to do both.
Very good. Thank you.
And as far as alcohol goes, that is something that at some point we may look at getting a beer and wine license if that's possible. And if not, then whoever is going to be catering that event, if they want to have, you know, somebody that is permitted to serve that, then they're more than happy to do that.
Okay, I believe
thank you.
Yeah, I believe there are, what, event permits that are available
they're per day event. There are per day events you can get.
Mr. Roddy, while I have you here as well, I apologize for kind of the informality, but it's just the nature of a Zoom meeting, really, I think, ends up promoting this. Are you expecting to see a maximum of 52 guests at any point in time that kind of fill the facility?
Yeah, kind of what we've done going through this process is we have completely relied on the city and talking with Andrew and the architect to be able to tell us what the capabilities are. And then whatever that number is, we will comply with it.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
I have no more questions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sage. I will open up to the public now. I believe there is at least one, if not a couple of people from the public that wish to address the commission. If they're on the phone, they need to get star 6 or star 9. If I get staff to kind of step in and help me, or...
Yes, star 9 to raise your hand if you're calling in by phone. And I do have one member so far, James.
Okay. James, now is your time. Please introduce yourself for the record, and then you have 3 minutes for your presentation.
Yes, Chair Martin, members of the Planning Commission, my name is James Lundy. I represent ownership of 1170 Grand Avenue to the west, and just had some questions real quick of Mr. Engstrom. On his site plan, he shows the occupancy load to be 111 people. I wanted to ask what that number meant.
That is just an occupancy number that's based on square footage times the use, and it's just a certain number. It's not necessarily an indication of how many people will actually be there. It's just a maximum allowed by the code.
Okay, but when we talked about 50-some-odd people, is that what was that number?
I think that would be more the expected use rather than the maximum allowable per code.
Okay, thank you. One of the other things that was Mr. Perez, you mentioned an easement off of Grand Avenue. I did want to point out, as owners of 1170, the applicant does not have access from Grand Avenue through to Briscoe. He has access off of Grand Avenue, but not to Briscoe. So one of the things that we think would be a disadvantage, along with the proximity of parking and the number of parking spaces provided on site, thought about are just in the event we have a full event of 111 people coming off of Grand Avenue and trying to offload people to the event center, they turn around in the parking lot. They have to make a three-point turn and come right back out the same Grand Avenue entrance, which is going to stack up onto Grand Avenue, create a traffic public safety issue that we think will negatively, adversely affect the surrounding neighbors. I've also submitted an aerial showing the proximity of our parking and how the public and the people attending the event would more than likely, you know, want to park on our property. Which is a concern of ours for a number of reasons, liability, just wear and tear, and just it's just really not allowed per the existing agreement. So we're concerned about that. And right now there's only 12 parking stalls if you remove the dumpster. I know that the plan says 14, but I think there's only 12. If you take a measurement, the stalls are 9 feet, and there's only room for 12. It's less than a third of the parking that would be required on site. And people in California just typically park as close as they can, and that could be be across the street, running across the street from the Golden Moon, which has a parking lot, you know, next door, anywhere, really. I think the last option is going to be the 600 feet down to the east. We do have more concerns, but I do see my time is up, so just wanted to point out a few of those issues. Really, the lack of access over to Briscoe for circulation for the project.
Very good. Thank you very much. And we did get your correspondence, and it is part of our record. We were able to review that before the meeting. Thank you very much.
Great.
Mr. Lundy.
You.
Yeah, thank you very much for your comments. Staff, is there anyone else in line that wishes to speak on this matter?
Chair Martin, there are no more raised hands.
Okay. I'm going to close the public comment. I'm going to bring it back to the commission. If we have additional questions for staff or the, you know, items you want to discuss on this particular item before I entertain a motion to approve this item. Mr. Shiro, do you have comments or additional questions that you would like to make on this?
I'm just curious, and maybe ex-councilman Planning Commissioner Guthrie has the memory of many, many more meetings like this, but I'm just curious if in this situation where you have, you know, a additional 37 spots 450 feet away, has there ever been any conditions placed on an applicant as far as them providing a parking monitor during, you know, at least during arrival times to make sure that the people that come to the meetings or the event park in the appropriate place? And I know that the applicant did have a chance to speak with Joel a little bit on his property along with one of the partners of the adjacent properties. And they said that they were going, you know, they were going to be good neighbors and do that. But in anybody's memory, is it within our purview, number one, and number two, have we ever done that where we say, you know, you've got to actually have somebody there, a staff member outside, making sure that the neighbor's parking is not being used?
Mr. Guthrie?
So, one, I don't remember ever actually approving or even voting on a project that had off-site parking.
Okay.
So, for starters, I actually have a question as well. But so, I don't know quite how we would do that unless we did it as part of. It occurs to me that there's this permit they have to get from the police department that we might include. Might be able to include it there, that when they got this permit, they would have to demonstrate that they were at least directing people to the other parking. Whether we could require that they monitored or not, it occurs to me that that sounds like it'd be problematic to me, but perhaps staff can give us better direction there. I did want to ask staff specifically about the fact that there's no access from Briscoe based on the easement. So is that site going to be chained off? Is that the impression I have, or just that we'll expect people won't use it? I'm very familiar with this corner, and I will tell you, anybody trying to make a left turn who came to this and then decided they wanted to go down and went out to Briscoe is going to be there for a week. So I do, even if they were making the left turn out of the front, that's not an easy left turn out of there to go down to the correct parking. So I wanted to check with staff about that easement and how that might be handled.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to clarify, Mr. Lundy, that the easement benefits the commercial condos and the storage facility to use the driveway apron located on the 1164 East Grand Avenue property. It doesn't. There's no reciprocal rights to allow the users of 1164 to go out through Briscoe. So it's expected that users of 1164 come out onto Grand Avenue and, you know, I think human nature will try to make that left, but I think the easiest way would be going down just, you know, 100 yards or so to Elm and making that U-turn. But
I had an additional just question. The applicant, he did, you know, he said he wanted to be a good neighbor and, you know, that he was going to be monitoring and having somebody monitor it. I just thought, is there a way that we can get that in writing? That was my first thought. And secondly, if there are issues with the neighbor, so let's say the applicant ends up not being able to control the parking and the neighbor is now towing, vehicles that are going to this event, these events. Is there a way, as far as the conditional use permit, for it to be taken back if the applicant is not basically following through on the plan that we have?
The entitlement is a property right that can't be revoked without a public hearing. So we would have to return to the Planning Commission and put that before the commission.
Yeah, and I wouldn't necessarily want to preemptively want to have that terminated, but I think that some of the concerns that I have, that the owner of that adjacent property has some legitimate concerns around access and, you know, egress across their property, as well as, you know, people that are parking there. The way I see the property line, the applicant really doesn't even need to get onto the neighboring property for access and egress. It's really the owners of 1164. I'm assuming that they are beneficiaries of an access agreement, you know, across this particular property in order to get access to their property.
Correct. So the users of the condo, the commercial condo property, they have the option of accessing their property via Briscoe or the driveway on the 1164 property.
So there's a recorded access agreement or easement agreement of some kind allowing the owners and the guests and the tenants of that commercial condo complex to use that driveway on Grand Avenue to gain access to their parcel.
Correct. It's on record for both the commercial condo users and the users of the storage facility.
Does the owner of this particular, the applicant's property, does he have access? I'm understanding that he does not have access rights to go, or for his guests to go across that neighboring parcel to, under normal circumstances, you know, access or egress off of Briscoe.
That is correct.
Mr. Sage, you have some questions or comments for the...
Actually, I do have one additional question that popped up, and that is regarding the two bathrooms. Are they handicap compliant?
Yes.
They are. Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I have.
Okay, the question I have, too, is, and Mr. Guthrie, I believe that we can dictate a number of conditions on this project where that limits the number of people, the hours of the day. I think even we'll condition it where we can require that they have a monitor of some kind. I want to make sure that depending on how, here again, it proceeds, if we're going to proceed with approval, that we include a conversations about the ability of the neighboring property owner to seek redress, you know, with the city, and how do we kind of establish a process or a protocol, you know, for that to happen. My concerns on this is it really comes down to, there are two issues I have. One is enforcement, and without a monitor, it's literally unenforceable. I think if there are 40 people coming to an event there, they're going to be, you know, they're going to have three or four spaces going to be taken up by staff that's handling, you know, the event. And let's assume there's 10 parking spaces left. There's going to be 10 to 15 people that are going to be parking at the parking lot adjacent to it, and then another 10 to 20 that are going to be parking, you know, that'll trudge down the street to that 450-foot-away parking lot. That may meet the city standard and the city code, but from a functional standpoint, it's going to be nigh on impossible, I think, to enforce that. And another concern that I have, and I certainly am happy to agree that the local realtor board is a long-term tenant and will probably continue to be a long-term tenant, but that certainly is not guaranteed. If that building in 3, 5, 6 years from now becomes a pizza parlor again, which it was a number of years ago, the interest of that pizza parlor owner, I'm sure, is not going to be to allow his evenings and weekends to have his parking lot full. That would have a specific and immediate impact on this particular business. So I'm cautious about, you know, approving this without recognizing that the conditional use permit process, you know, needs to have a clear ability to come back and review this as circumstances change. So, Mr. Sage, you have additional comments at this point?
I'm sorry?
Do you have any additional comments or questions?
I do not.
Okay. Thank you. Very good.
I have a question, just maybe,
go ahead.
Maybe for Andrew, maybe it's for Jim, just listening to your comment, Chair Martin. If that were to become a pizza parlor, they would need a CUP, correct?
Correct. And that's obviously a hypothetical example, but
right.
Years ago, that was a pizza parlor. And
right.
Pizza parlor operated there for a number of years. So
just for the sake of clarification, if they were to have given their spots up for uses to this event center, they would have to do something with parking themselves, right, or not?
Well, because this is a parking agreement, I think, I would consider it more of a temporary agreement and not something that would be permanent. Please correct me, Stab, if I'm wrong.
Yeah, if I can just chime in. So,
please, yes.
You know, should the project be entitled tonight, we'll ask the applicant and the owner of the realtor offices to formalize their parking agreement on a form provided by the city attorney. And in that form, there are recitals and conditions that say that if for some reason the agreement changes, whether, you know, the applicant here wants to expand his use or the realtor's office wants to prevent them from using those parking spaces anymore. Either party is required to notify the city, in which we will approach the applicant and work with them to either modify the use or just do whatever is appropriate based on the parking situation at that time.
And depending on what occurs at that time, here again, it's all kind of hypothetical. It may or may not end up returning to the Planning Commission for their evaluation.
I guess I'm just trying to get to some of the details, and a lot of it's hypothetical, and maybe it doesn't even apply to what would happen here. But, you know, like Jim said, he can't remember when we ever did, even though shared parking is within our rules, he can't remember when we actually did one. And so I guess my question is, how do we need more language, you know, within our rules to make these more workable? And you know, how many times could those spaces be shared? Could they sign another agreement with somebody else to use those 37 spots for somebody, you know, to the east? And then what are our rules within our code of how much this can be shared? I guess that's one of my questions.
And this is where enforcement really becomes an issue.
Sure.
We don't want to overcomplicate the expectation or the needs on or the demands on staff and stuff like that.
I just want to know within our rules right now, if these are going to happen, and I think that they might happen more often, how do we make it? What are the limits currently within our land use, you know, element in our current rules?
Mr. Guthrie?
I just want to add two things. One is that you guys have actually approved an Ostia parking agreement at the church. I never done one, but you guys have done one.
Correct.
And whatever the rules are there, in fact, two or three separate agreements, any one of which could go away and would, I guess, close the church. I mean, I do wonder how that takes place,
right.
Which actually go in and pull their license.
Right. The good news in that particular one is that they were sharing the parking lot of the movie theater which is immediately across the street, which is not a, certainly well within that 450 or 500 foot limit, whatever, as well as the building.
I thought they had a couple of them, though.
I think they also may have had one with the building next door where Rugged Radio was, and that's obviously in transition into a different use. So we'll have to kind of wait and see how that really unfolds. But I agree with you. I do believe that we signed that or approved that off-site parking agreement. But I think the bulk of that was picked up by the parking lot at the movie theater across the street rather than.
I just remember I was surprised there were I thought there were two or three separate agreements, but I may be remembering.
Well, and here again, there may have been, you're testing my memory as well, because the church did want to limit their number to 50 or 75 on Sunday morning. I think they were, ideally would love to be able to see, 100 or more people, participate in their services, which would have a significant impact on the residential parking on the street, on that street, as well as, an impact. Their membership would certainly park in the movie parking lot anyway. And so that became
To use that example, I guess this question would be for Andrew. So if now over at the church and the parking lot that's now been shared, if there was another business opening, could they also go over and get a second agreement to share those spaces under our current code?
No, they would not be able to. For the example of this project before us tonight, we saw another proposal for a shared parking agreement. We would look at the hours in which they are proposed to share them. So we will assume going forward that the spaces that are in this offsite parking agreement are going to be occupied Monday through Friday from 5 to 10 and all day on the weekends. So they're confused. So, and we have all those recorded documents in our city files, and it's part of the review process to look and ensure that the spaces that are part of the offsite parking agreement are actually available and physically available for the use.
Okay. Thank you.
Any additional comments?
I'll just follow up on yours real quick. So could we require a monitor? Could we make that a requirement that their special events would have a parking?
I think we can. And
I'm asking Andrew, but...
Sure.
Now I see Whitney's on. All right.
Yeah, I think that's certainly within the commission's purview. If you'd like to add a condition that the applicant provide a monitor to ensure parking takes place in the off-site parking agreement allocated spaces.
Could we do it to where there are events over 15 people or something like that?
I think that's reasonable. Yes.
The other thing is, for me, I don't want to be, beating up this poor applicant on the use. I certainly don't know. It may be an appropriate question. I'm happy to pose another question to the applicant or the representative. What are they anticipating? Obviously, hypothetically, they could be doing these events 5 nights a week and all day Saturday and Sunday with 50-plus people there. But what is their anticipation or anticipated, load and use on this? I think that might be better, so we're not trying to over-legislate the needs in order to address a situation that might not really exist. I don't want to ignore it, but also don't want to be over-encumbering the applicants. Mr. Engstrom or Mr. Riley, did either one of you have a comment you would like to add at this point?
Joe, why don't you address that?
Okay. First of all, in the initially going through it, we were looking at weekends, just thinking that because most people are going to have, parties and things on the weekend or whatever they want to do is kind of our initial thought behind it. If I can say one thing going beyond just being a good neighbor, one thing that we have offered and I want to make sure is that we are going to have signage that is going to be temporary signage that is going to be put up. I understand that the parking lot adjacent to our property does not want people parking there. And I take that very seriously. This is not something where, you know, every time we have an event, we want there to be an argument or a problem. That's not why we're doing this. And so we will have proper signage put up so that when people pull in, they understand that they are not to go beyond that barrier, and that if they do, that there is a chance that their vehicle is going to be towed away at owner's expense. We are, you know, in getting the parking agreement with the people that we did, we actually had one that was closer than that, but because of concerns about them having current people that were leasing offices and things, we didn't want to infringe on that. That's the reason why we went to the one that we currently have. It did provide us more parking, but also, you know, we are very aware of what this looks like to everybody. It is not our intent to get this approved so that then we can just do what we want to do. We are going to comply with what we are required to do. We have thought seriously more than anything about the parking because we understand that. And so we are going to have proper signage put up, and we will, you know, we are going to do our best to make sure that we fall within the guidelines set by the city.
Very good. Thank you very much. Those are helpful comments. I do have one last question for staff. I think before I'm going to encourage conditions to be presented by planning commissioners to be included in this in the motion. But on page A1 of the plans, under the project data, it says event center, 1,550 square feet, 104, you know, participants for a total of 111. So obviously that's a total of 7 between the offices and the kitchen staff. But in the parking calcs, it talks about, oh, that was in the plumbing. The plumbing fixture calcs only allows for 52 occupants. And I guess really was one of my questions. Is there a designated limit yet on this, or, you know, should we be limiting or looking at that? They're building out the restrooms for a total of 52 or a total of 57 people on site, but the zoning and the project the occupancy will allow virtually double that number.
Yeah, Commissioner Martin, great question. The maximum occupancy will ultimately be determined by the plumbing fixture count and what that allows. Building code's pretty clear that it sets a certain ratio of the number of, you know, the restroom facilities based on the number of occupants you expect to have. So that's going to be their limiting factor in this situation.
And it's those calculations that the parking calculations are actually drawn on, you know, requiring the 35 spaces.
35, yeah, the, or whatever the that calculation number. Based on the floor area that's...
And based on that occupancy of 57.
Well, the parking calculations, it's a simple...
Is it independent from the plumbing costs?
Correct.
Very good. Okay.
I could ask one more question.
Yeah, absolutely.
But going back to the permit that they have to pull for each special event with the police department, does that require that they have a specific contact person who's available all during the event that the police can contact if there is any kind of a parking issue?
Yes. Yeah, the applicant would be the main point of contact for any event, or if they have a manager on site, would be listed on that public safety welfare permit.
But there's a welfare permit, as I read it anyway, there's a welfare permit required for every single event. Each one gets a permit. Am I misunderstanding that?
No, that's correct.
So
they have an opportunity to name a different person at each event based on who's going to be staffing that event for the applicant.
So can we require that the person who is the contact for that permit is on site?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or their designee, obviously. For me, as long as there's someone
that the police can contact if one of the neighbors calls up and says they're parking in my parking lot.
Right. That's
is that something we would actually need to do here, or is that something that would naturally happen? I think that's what
I presume that's what would happen. If, for example, the Women's Center, the public safety welfare permit is required for each event that's held there, and you know, should any issues arise with the neighbors, the police department has the permit in hand with who the lead contact is for that particular event. So it serves that purpose for events across the city.
Is there a minimum number? I mean, if Mr. Riley wants to have a, I'm just going to say, a training event of some kind with 10 people there, he doesn't have to pull a special permit or separate permit, I don't believe, at that point. Is there a minimum number that would initiate an event permit?
There are certain triggers for the permit requirement. I don't know them off the top of my head. I know, number of attendees is one trigger. Whether it's alcohol served is another. So a variety of uses that we'll look at and determine if a permit is necessary in each event.
And my last question before I think we get to addressing this motion specifically is, between the permit process for these special events, is there a designated procedure for a neighbor to submit or to file a complaint? To me, it's kind of like, you know, these vacation rentals. You know, the neighbors have, I don't know whether here at this point, I don't know whether they're being given this on an annual basis or just a periodic, less frequent basis. But at some point, they're getting a postcard or a notice of some kind saying, hey, you know, here's a vacation rental in your neighborhood. If you've got an issue or question or complaint, this is who you contact and how to contact that person. Is there an equivalent process or procedure that exists within the city at this point, or is there something that we should specifically condition on this project?
There is not that currently in place for the public safety welfare permits. I think people would be encouraged just to call the police department's non-emergency line.
Okay. I'm willing to consider this motion, so I'm willing to entertain a motion on this project. There are a couple of conditions that I would like to see added, but if there is someone else who would also like to start that list of proposed conditions, additional conditions on this use permit resolution, I'm open for that participation for my fellow commissioners at this time.
Yes,
Mr. Guthrie.
Go ahead.
I'll go ahead. So I have that we would limit the capacity to 60 people, that we would require signage indicating that something essentially says, and staff can help me with this, that if this parking lot's full, you need to go to this location, and a 10 p.m. closure.
Okay, Mr. Shiro.
Yeah, I would just, I would really like to see there some language that there be a monitor present, whether that's the same person that is also on the permit, and I would say for with 15 attendees or more, I mean, that's probably where that parking lot would, that first parking lot would start to fill up, and there would be need to park somewhere else. I don't think for small training sessions it's necessary. So that's the addition I'd like to see there.
Okay. Mr. Sage, you have a comment?
Mr. Sage, you're going to have to unmute your phone.
You're still muted at this point. Okay, I'm going to make the motion on the resolution, and I'm going to alter these conditions nominally, but certainly open it for, with a second, and I think we can open it for discussion and for additional revisions or additions to conditions on this. But I move that the Planning Commission of the City of Rio Grande approve the conditional use permit 20003 located at 1164 East Grand Avenue, applied for by Joel Riley, with these conditions. And the first condition is to limit it to a total of 57 people on site, or consistent with the plumbing restrictions as designated, you know, on their drawings and permitted by the city. I know that's just a couple of people, but this whole enforcement thing, and I'm not going to be down there on Saturday night counting heads, but I think that we need to, let's make that condition consistent, you know, with the plumbing rules, and I think that number is 57 on site. The second condition is appropriate signage at any event, and what I'm going to do is any event, well, really appropriate signage needs to be put out, I think, on any event in order just to encourage that. The third condition is that events shall terminate at 10 p.m. or no later than 10 p.m. And the fourth condition is that a parking monitor be present, and I'd like to specify within that condition that monitor be present at least 30 minutes before the start of the event, so there's adequate time for people that are coming, that there's someone that's there on site that's monitors doesn't appear, and there's already 10 people parking next door. And I'm happy to put 15 attendees as the minimum number required to require an active on-site or live monitor during this, the parking fair. I think that's an appropriate number. If they're doing a training event or even a social event of some kind that's under 15, I don't see that emerging as an issue, you know, with parking. So those are the four conditions that I can support on this. Do we have a second for this motion?
A second?
Mr. Shavro, a second. Do we have any additional discussion, additional conversation, additional revisions that would like to be? Mr. Sage, I'm going to give you the first chance. Are you hearable at this point?
Looks like Mr. Sage hung up.
Nope. He's got his phone plugged into his ear right now, but it doesn't, sounds like it's connecting, so.
Going to have to dial back in.
Yeah, you may have to dial back if he wants to. And my other fellow commissioners, Ms. Mayor Vili, do you have anything to add at this point?
No, I think the conditions sound good. I would say the parking monitor should be more like 20. I think 15 is actually a little, but it's not that big of a thing to argue about.
Certainly. Mr. Guthrie, Mr. Shire, do you have an opinion whether 15 or 20 is a more appropriate number to put at the base on this?
I was just spitballing it. It's obviously not a exact science there, but there's 12 spots, right, in the way they're going to redraw that lot. So even my
thought, if they can redraw that and even get to the 14, it's going to be between 12 and 14. Any event that they have, there's going to be two or three staff people. I mean, there may be a single staff person if they're just doing a training event with 10 people.
Right. But
you're going to get to 10 vehicles fairly quickly, I think.
I think a lot of people will come in pairs, obviously.
Right.
And also if it's like a board meeting or something for like a nonprofit, a lot of boards are 12 to 15 members, so that could prohibit those kind of events at the site if we did.
I'm happy to moderate that to 20 because that's certainly going to be the point where it certainly will be a legitimate issue. So I'm happy to move that number to 20.
That's fine with me.
Okay. Mr. Sage, are you with us at this point?
I believe I am.
Yes, we can hear you. Do you have questions, comments, additions?
All of the above,
please.
I don't have any more comments.
Okay. Mr. Guthrie, any other comments? Time for meeting. Okay, may we have a roll call vote? And to review this, let me go through this one more time, just for the benefit of staff on this. This is the resolution of the Planning Commission for the City of Rio Grande at the conditional use permit 20-003 at 1164 East Grand. There are four conditions. One is limiting the number of participants or attendees at 57, or consistent with the improved, plumbing fixture calculations. All events, parking signage will be provided, highlighting where the appropriate parking is available for that particular event. No event shall take place after 10 p.m. And the fourth one is that on any activity or event where there would be 20 or more attendees, that a live parking monitor be on site and present 30 minutes before the event in order to help facilitate and control parking on the adjacent property. Can I have a roll call vote, please? Or before the roll call, staff, is there something that we have done that is not, would not either be legal or survive kind of a normal, appropriate review?
Just wanted to clarify on the condition that limits the number of attendees. So you said 57 people or the maximum established by the number?
Well, the plumbing counts there are at 57. And that's the only reason I'm doing that.
Okay. Just want to make sure that if there's two different numbers, that you want to do the more restrictive or the more permissive number?
Well, the number that's the fixture calc on the drawings right now says 57, 52 plus 5. So I think that's the number that needs to be there. I guess for me, just off the top, it wouldn't surprise me that in the process of putting this together, if they wanted to add another fixture in either the men's or women's or both restrooms, that might change those calculations. And I'm just kind of giving them that flexibility to do that.
So can I make the recommendation that we just establish that condition that the maximum number of attendees is limited by the fixture count and the building code?
I'm satisfied with that.
Okay.
Clarification.
Just for clarity's sake. Thank you.
Very good. Is that the only clarification, Mr. Perez?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. May we have a roll call vote now, please?
Chair Martin?
Yes.
Vice Chair Shiro?
Yes.
Commissioner Guthrie?
Yes.
Commissioner Maravilla?
Yes.
And Commissioner Sage?
You really should have started with me while I was still connected. Yes.
Very good. Thank you very much. This resolution in motion passes 5-0. I want to thank everybody for their participation. I want to thank the applicant and those that have wrote in and those that have called in order to participate in this. I know that participating into a Zoom meeting with the constraints right now due to the COVID, it does not make this easy. And I appreciate people's participation, and hopefully we can make it easier in the future as we move on. The next item is a non-public hearing item. It's consideration of a planning commission appointment to the Community Service Grant Committee. Mr. Perez, you have a brief presentation on this item, please.
If I could just interrupt real quick.
Sure.
Mr. Sage, there's a bit of an echo coming through your phone. Would you mind turning down your speaker on your computer, seeing if that helps it?
Sure. How's that?
It's better.
We'll see as we proceed.
Right. Thank you. Okay. Mr. Perez.
All right. Thank you. So quick discussion item here, and a presentation on some of the background about the Arroyo Grande Community Service Grant Panel and the appointment that we're looking for from the commission. So the Arroyo Grande Community Service Grant Program was established in 2014 when City Council recognized the need to allocate funding for social service requests. And since the inception of the program, the Council has budgeted $20,000 each year to fund these requests for organizations to help out in the community. So annually, nonprofits will submit their applications in November with the funds awarded in the springtime. So to be eligible for funding, an organization must operate as a nonprofit, directly serve the Arroyo Grande community, may not discriminate based on factors such as race, religion, gender, and may not use the grant funds for religious activities. So as I mentioned, a typical allocation of funds from the budget is $20,000 to this program. However, council recognized that due to restrictions on fundraising brought on by the COVID pandemic, they authorized an additional $5,000 to the program, in, I believe it was in the summer. And then later in the summer, in the fall, when the city received CARES Act revenue, the council decided to allocate an additional $25,000 to the community grant service program, bringing the total funding for the fiscal year 2021 program to $50,000. So what the grant panel will do is basically review each application and then end up making a funding recommendation to City Council. The panel consists of a member from each of our advisory bodies, the Architectural Review Committee, Planning Commission, the Downtown Parking Advisory Board, the Arroyo Grande Tourism Business Improvement District Board, and finally the Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors. So we're looking for the commission to appoint one planning commissioner and one alternate to participate in the grant panel. And just put it out there, this year we received 16 applications from nonprofits requesting a total of $127,000. So quite a bit more than what's allocated to the program, so a lot of programs in need, so it's a pretty important position. And I'll turn it back over to Chair Martin for discussion.
And typically, is this a single meeting or a couple of meetings where these applications are reviewed? How's that process handled?
Generally, it's a single meeting. So due to our current restrictions, it'll be held via Zoom. The grant panel participant will be given a binder of all the applications, probably a week or so ahead of time, for them to give a chance to review and kind of basically grade each application. Then the grant panel will convene at the meeting. Usually it takes, you know, 3-ish hours to make their final recommendations to council.
Is there a volunteer from the Planning Commission that would like to sit on that committee this year?
Glenn, I just had a question real quick of Andrew. Isn't this originally the Jim Guthrie Service Award? Wasn't it named after our newest planning commissioner?
It was, and renamed this year Mr. Guthrie's request.
In the spirit of that, I know that Jim doesn't like the limelight, but in the spirit of that, since it was initially the Jim Guthrie, I would like to nominate our newest commissioner, Guthrie, to sit on that committee.
I knew I should have asked them to include a deal that I don't have to participate, but I failed to do that. I would serve if that's the commission, but if anybody else wants to do it, trust me, I'm game.
I had the opportunity to do it 2 years ago, I believe. So it's a great privilege and certainly needed. Probably now more than ever.
And Mr. Guthrie, I'm happy to stand as your second if, in fact, something precludes you from being able to participate.
Okay, thank you.
So with that, I will entertain a motion that Mr. Guthrie be appointed and Mr. Martin be designated as the backup person to sit on this grants commission. Can we get a roll call vote, please?
Chair Martin, I think I may have missed your second.
Oh, you were right. Okay, I'm sorry. You were absolutely right. Mr. Shiro has agreed to second that motion.
So, Chair Martin?
Yes.
Vice Chair Shiro?
Yes.
Commissioner Guthrie?
Yes.
Commissioner Maravilla?
Yes.
And Commissioner Sage?
Yes.
Very good. That passes. Next item. Thank you. Thanks, Jim, very much. The notice of administrative decisions, I think there are three items on this. Are there any questions or comments that anyone from the commission would like to make about these administrative decisions that were made since this last meeting? I think it's probably appropriate. Is there anyone from the public that is sitting there that would like to make any kind of comments or a question? Because I think this is probably during the public review period for these administrative items, and I don't want to lose an opportunity should there be someone from the community that would want to be able to address any one of these projects.
Chair Martin, there are no members in attendance right now.
Very good. Thank you very much. Then, as we come down to the end, are there any commission communications being made from their fellow commissioners that they would like to share at this time before we close our meeting?
I'd just like to quickly say to our newest council member. See, I did it again. That's twice in the one meeting. our newest planning commissioner, Mr. Guthrie, I just want to welcome you. And having watched, I think our other commissioners probably have seen this. If they haven't, I've seen as a council member, then Councilman Guthrie, in some pretty sticky meetings with some mud flying. And it's nice to have somebody that can keep calm and stay focused. And it's good to have you here.
Thank you.
Any other commissioner comments?
I'd like to second those comments.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, so any staff communications, any final comments from staff before we adjourn the meeting here tonight? Ms. McDonald, welcome.
Thank you. I'll just jump in real briefly to let everybody know. First of all, the housing element was presented to the City Council at their last meeting on January 26th, and they did adopt it, and it has been sent to HCD for their final review and certification. So congratulations. And I don't know if anybody was watching the meeting. There were many thanks given to your commission for your detailed review of that element and all your work on it, making it a better product and a better representation for our city. So thank you for all of your work on that really important item for us. Another item I wanted to mention is you will be meeting a new community your new community development director. He will be joining us on February 11th. A press release went out earlier today. His name is Rob Fitzroy. He's currently the assistant planning director for the County of San Luis Obispo. We're very excited to welcome him. I think he's going to be able to hit the ground running. He has a lot of experience in city and regional planning as well as CEQA. And he's familiar with the area. He's been in the county for several years, and so we're just really excited to bring him on board. So he will be here for whenever our next Planning Commission meeting is going to be held. And then just wanted to, again, echo the welcoming comments to our new commissioner, Mr. Guthrie, and then also just kind of shout to the whoever may be listening, thanks to Commissioner Montes as well for her service. So
absolutely.
Thank you, everybody, and it was good to see everyone. And you will still see me again. I will at least be here for our next meeting to introduce our new community development director. So really happy to be a part of our commission during this incredibly odd time. And this is, you know, thank you to Commissioner Sage for sticking with us and being able to make your voice heard. So thank you.
Nothing like a challenge.
Very good. I think that wraps it up for us tonight. It's at 7:24. This meeting is hereby adjourned. Thank you very much for your participation, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you all.
Thanks, everyone. See you later.